This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The 2-2 pitch. Wynn drives it. Left field. Hit deep. Back toward the wall. And the ball goes off the wall. It's an RBI double for Wynn. Carlson's throw goes into third. Wynn is in scoring position now, representing the tying run.
The Gas House Gang is coming up at 12 o'clock, but we couldn't wait to talk to Bernie Miklas, who is co-hosting with me today. He is KMOX Sports contributor, host of the Gas House Gang, and he's with us on Tuesdays for our weekly chat with the manager of the Cardinals, Ollie Marmol, and it's always a really fun chat.
That segment is some of the best sports radio I have ever heard.
It's great.
Yeah.
Ollie, like, right? How do you feel about that,
yeah,
Bernie?
I like it. I love it. Can I follow up on Tuesday's show a little bit? You'll all appreciate this very much. Remember when I was having some fun with Ollie Tuesday, where I think it was Tom Ackerman prompted me to, but I don't, Ronj, if it was you, I apologize, but one of you guys prompted me noting my Baltimore roots and saying, are you going to recommend something to Ollie?
Yeah.
Where should Ollie eat in Baltimore? And I went on in this thing. I said, look, man, forget about like a chicken Caesar salad or a club sandwich. You can get that anywhere. Ollie, you got to go pound some crab cakes, man. Go pound the crab. So I'm getting started on my day yesterday about 7:30 in the morning, and I get a text from Ollie Marmol, and he shows me a photo of crab cakes that he had the night before after our show.
Uh-huh.
So you gotta love that, right?
You got some influence, man.
So I gave him, we were laughing about that, you know, and it's funny. I got a text from him this morning, or actually I asked him something. I said, how did you win that game last night? Your hitter struck out 16 times. Your starting pitcher got knocked out in the fourth inning. You were behind 3-0 and 4-2. You left all kinds of runners on base. How the heck do you win that game? And he said, you know, he texted me back. He said, you know, it was like we're going to the fifth inning, and I was talking to Dusty Blake, and I was talking to Daniel Descalzo, and we all just like looked at each other, nodded, and said, we'll find a way to win this game. These players will find a way. And they did. I mean, I love watching this team play baseball.
So that's really interesting, because there are teams, and they'll never admit it until maybe well after the fact, like after the season is over. But there are teams that will, whether it's the entire season or whether it's like a certain ballpark or a certain opponent, where they always feel like something bad's about to happen.
Right.
They'll never admit it in real time. They'll tell you later. But when you have it on the other end, and when you have it in such a way that you feel like anytime we go to the ballpark, no matter what happens in the first couple of innings, we're going to come back here. The fact they are there, Bernie, is very special. I just hope they can hold on to this for a while.
Well, that's the thing. And you can, you know, I was texting after the game last night with my baby brother, as in like 55 years old or whatever. But I was talking to my baby brother, Brad, and who's an Orioles fan. He lives there. And I said, you know, Brad, I was watching this game tonight and I couldn't help but think, and this is a cliche, granted. I said, we saw two teams in this game Wednesday night. I saw one team that obviously has evolved to the point where they just know how to win a game like that. The other team, the home team, looks like a team this season, because they're terrible this season, that will find a way to lose such a game. That's exactly the difference between the Cardinals and the Orioles at this point in time. But as the Orioles offer a really important lesson here, the Orioles came out of a big-time tear. They were awful for 4 or 5 years or whatever. You know, and they won 100 games 2 years ago. They won 91 last year. And say, well, boy, these young guys learn how to win. Well, this season they've got the third worst winning percentage in the majors. The only teams worse are Colorado and Chicago White Sox. So you can learn how to win, but you can also lose it if you don't take care of business. But I have a feeling this Cardinals team is pretty resilient, pretty tough-minded.
Well, the offensive comebacks don't matter if the bullpen fails. And this team right now has got an incredibly effective and fairly deep bullpen. And right. How long is that sustainable, though? Because, you know, if the starters are going to give you 4 1/3 consistently, which is what we got last night, that's gonna wreak havoc on the bullpen. You really need the starters to get deeper into these games.
You're so right, Mr. Kelly. Mr. Hancock. See, I'm confused with your
they're basically the same.
We had a guest yesterday that said told Mike that he asked great questions.
That was you
twice.
They have the exact same opinion, so they're pretty much the same guy.
This just shows you, you know, I know one of you guys is kind of liberal. One is kind of conservative. It just shows you. I don't care either way. I recognize you as a team.
There you
know?
Go.
So I may call you by the other guy's name from now. I apologize for that.
That's fine. You should hear what my wife calls me.
But anyway, you know, the Cardinals starting pitching in this Baltimore series was, frankly, it was terrible. Fetty and Polanyi and Michaelis, they averaged less than 5 innings in the 3 games. They had an ERA of 6.14. The Orioles beat them up for like a 3.33 batting average. But the bullpen saved the day. These last two nights, in both of these games, the Cardinals had to win 2 in a row to win the series. And these two nights where they were comeback wins and they trailed in both games and the hitters got out in front of it. And then the last two nights, the bullpen put the two games together. 8 1/3 innings of scoreless relief. I mean, Mr. Hancock, that just kind of reaffirms what you're saying. The bullpen turnaround has been huge. The turning point in the season was when Ollie Marmol and the pitching coach just kind of rearranged the bullpen on the off day and came up with a new plan on April the 25th. You know, and since that day, the Cardinals are 22-9, and they have the second best bullpen in baseball, according to ERA. See, that's the turning point to the season. And frankly, I think a lot of people just missed that. I don't know why, but they did. You didn't, because you're talking about how the bullpen's been, you know, pulling them out of fires for quite a while now. This team did not become what it could become until they got that bullpen straightened out, and they have. As far as sustainability, that's a great question. I think they are assembling some bullpen depth. I think they have some guys in the minors that can come up here and fill in when maybe some of the relievers are a little gassed. So we'll just have to wait and see, because bullpens are volatile. That said, the Cardinals had a great bullpen last season, and they never really wavered. They were really strong from start to finish. So it can happen.
So what you're talking about and the idea of sustainability and the bullpen performing well, that goes hand in hand with starters giving good innings. And you did say that in this past series, they didn't go deep enough in games. So if you look at overall for the entire season, the Cardinals are 6th in baseball in terms of innings by starters, which is very good. That's what you want. You want to be up there in that range. And the other teams that are in front of them, all of them are good teams with the exception of the Pirates, right? So that's a way to win. But if it starts to become a thing where starters aren't getting into the fifth inning regularly, that will start to put pressure on the bullpen again. So does it concern you that will happen, or do you feel pretty confident that was just one series? Let's not worry about that.
I think that it's a tough thing to answer, because I don't entirely trust the rotation. I should say parts of the rotation. But I also think that in this day and age, where really the standards for innings pitched by starters is really, really low, the Cardinals get more innings from their starters, even when you bake in the times that they don't. If you just look at the body of the work, they relative to the other teams, they actually come out pretty well in that evaluation. So I think they've already shown they're capable of averaging over 5 innings, like somewhere around 5.5 innings if you put all their starts together. They were in the top 5 or 6 in Major League Baseball the last time I checked. So,
they're 6th now. Yep.
Yeah, so the these last three games don't change my outlook on that. Now, I will say this. I think Andre Pallant, first of all, I forgive Miles Michaelis. He couldn't grip his curveball in that wet mess last night. And as well as he's pitched, it's okay to have a mulligan there because he's been terrific. Andre Pallante is the one that concerns me because he's walking too many people. Right-handed batters are killing him. He's given up way too many home runs. And I think they'd be better served by having Michael McGreevy up here and letting Pallante regroup down in the minors for a while. That's my one thing that I would plop down on the table. I've kind of seen enough of Andre Pallante for a while. I mean, his last 8 or 9 starts, his ERA is about 5.
Yeah.
And so, he's going the wrong way is what I'm trying to say. Fetty's a little inconsistent. Gray's good. He's not great. He's good. Libertor has been fantastic.
Yes. But also there's an innings threshold with him I am concerned about.
We don't know until we get there. And I think I think Marmol and Blake will be careful with that.
You talk about Pallante. That was the whole bugaboo with him out of the bullpen was he couldn't get the right-handers out.
Right.
And they finally got him working inside, and that seemed to work last year when he started the last half of the season. But you're right. He's falling back into that problem. And he would have to get stretched out at this point. But Steven Matz would seem to be a possible option for that rotation as well. He's pitched great.
And then they're going to go to the six-man rotation for a little while in June because they have a really, really rugged schedule. There's only like two off days maybe, scheduled off days. So they're going to have to call on all hands, So we'll see what happens. But I have enough confidence in all of those guys except Pallante right now. And they just need him to be a lot better. Michaelis, for what Miles Michaelis is at his age, he's having a really unexpectedly good season. But you have to ask, is that sustainable? Not just because of last night. You just have to ask that. Pallante, though, the problem is, see, Gray and Libertor and Fetty and all the starters except Pallante, see, they take advantage of the great defense behind them, right? Pallante isn't. Because even though he gets a pretty high ground ball rate, the one thing with this defense behind you, the one thing as a starting pitcher you cannot do is you can't issue silly walks, really silly walks, and you can't allow home runs. And see, he's doing both of those things now. A lot of dumb walks and home runs against him. That's how you fail to take advantage of your defense. And everyone in that rotation takes advantage of the defense. He doesn't.
Lastly, Bernie, before we say goodbye here, I'm still looking ahead to the trade deadline. It's, we're not close to that yet. We're still about 2 months away from that happening. And we talk about whether or not they add, if they're in the same position, a couple of games out or tied or in first place, if they add something at the deadline. Reliever seems most likely. It's always the easiest thing to get. Is it possible that they acquire a starter, or is it just more likely that this is what they have and this is what they'll roll with?
I'd be surprised if they do anything big. If the front office and the analysts in the front office, and yeah, maybe even Heim Bloom has identified a starter who might be available who is better than many other teams think, and they can get him in a reasonable price. I could see the scenario like that. But again, it's not going to be a big splashy name, but it might be someone under the radar who's actually quietly effective. But more than anything, as they continue to trend positively, I mean, the Cardinals have the second best record in baseball in May, and number one record in baseball since May the 4th. If they can continue to trend in such a positive fashion, when you're getting closer to the deadline, the one thing John Mozeliak won't do is trade Ryan Helsley or trade Nolan Arenado. Not that there'd be a much of a market for Arenado, but he's not going to subtract from this team in any way that matters. I mean, he would break the hearts of every one of those guys in the clubhouse. You can't give up on your team and do something like that. You just have to ride it out. And I know some of my friends, people I respect, they're like, no. This is not a team that can win the World Series. This is not a team that can do this, do that. You have to do the practical thing. And if you can trade Helsley, you trade him no matter what your record is. I'm sorry, it doesn't work like that in sports. It just doesn't. Yeah, pragmatically, yeah, that's probably right. But you know, we all need to get away from the calculator from time to time. And there is a human element. You remember when the Brewers traded Josh Hader a couple three years ago?
Yes.
It just devastated that clubhouse, and the yep. Brewers fell apart. So you can't do that. Not after these guys have played their guts out so far to be one of the surprise teams in baseball.
Bernie, we will continue the conversation during the Gas House Gang at 12, which will start with the press conference from City SC after they have let go of their head coach. So, Bernie, we'll talk again shortly.
All right. Great to be with you. Thanks, John Hancock, as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie.
Not Michael Kelly. Bernie Miklas, KMOX sports contributor here again on the Gas House Gang today. We do start at 12, but we do have the press conference at 12, so that'll cut into some Gas House Gang time today. But if you want to listen to the press conference, this is the place to do it. 104.1 FM, KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I was made aware earlier today that we have been slandered. Not you, because you're filling in on the show. You're not here every day.
Yeah.
Amy Marks Kors is. That's John Hancock. I'm Chris Ranji.
Here I am.
But I was told that we were slandered
by
the Dave Glover Show, or libeled. I don't know which one it is, but I think it's slandered.
Yeah, libel is in print.
So my understanding is during their show yesterday, Rachel Zimmerman, who sits in the seat where Matt Pajeski sits,
that's the,
running the board.
Board operator.
Yeah, the board
that's
operator
right.
over here. That she put her hand on a booger, which was left on the seat,
disgusting.
She says. Right?
Yes, that's what she says.
And somebody, was it Andrew or was it Rachel or Dave or Kevin?
Andrew.
Andrew says, wow, what do you expect from the Chris and Amy show? That's what they do, leaving a mess everywhere. Am I
you're,
right?
You're
that's
correct.
What they said?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to say this right now. There's nobody in the building messier than the Dave Glover show.
Whoa.
Nobody. And mostly it's Andrew. Andrew leaves his crap in that talent office where we all sit. We all share this office. He leaves there. If you walk in there, there's a common table that everybody uses.
Right.
There's only one person I know who sits there and eats lunch every day. His name's Andrew. And Andrew leaves.
I like Andrew.
Oh, they're napkins and plates.
Condiments.
Mustard
crumbs.
And ketchup.
Condiments.
And crumbs and old cookies and old cake and old everything.
Boogers, too, probably.
Boogers. Leaving him at that table, and he has the audacity to say the Chris and Amy show is messy?
I still think you guys
are
all
better. Are you kidding
me? You guys are all better than the gal from the other station over there that makes an egg in the microwave every day.
Oh, yeah.
Who does that?
The gal over there at whatever station that is.
At 97.1?
No.
We'll talk off the air.
No, right. I didn't know there was an egg laid somewhere. Was an egg lady?
Yeah,
somebody microwaved
for
their breakfast.
It's eggs.
Yeah.
And it's not a good
they're rotten
aroma.
Pajeski, did you leave a booger on that chair?
I did not. No. I pick my nose in the sports office, not in Studio B.
Well, let me...
Why do you pick your nose in the sports?
Wait a minute. We have video evidence of this, right?
There are cameras in here.
Yeah, and so you could go back and watch the show from yesterday in its entirety.
Yeah.
And not see Matt stick his finger in his nose.
Once.
And then deposit the booger on the chair.
What I did do yesterday was eat some green grapes, though, as I did today.
Yeah.
It's a great snack. Healthy.
Oh, so like maybe the little bits of the grape.
Yes.
I don't know how how would you manage to do that, first of all?
But
I guess
it was a misidentified debris, perhaps.
So it was a grape, not a boog.
Yeah.
It could have been a grape.
Could have been a, well, I'd feel a lot better sticking my hand in a grape than a boog.
How in the hell would you do that? Like, you put the whole grape in your mouth. Did something fall out?
Well, you get
out?
A lot of grapes in there,
well,
and
you,
one just shoots off.
You're talking. You start talking. He's over there talking, and a grape pops out. I'm in my 60s. I can relate to that. You start talking, the food starts flying. You know?
Well, don't do that.
Don't do that.
That's why they say keep your mouth closed when you eat.
Well, that's exactly right.
There's shrapnel when you eat grapes.
There are.
No, there isn't. There shouldn't be.
They shoot out juice sometimes. Yep.
But I'm not listening to that show talk about us being messy.
Usually, the joy of eating the grape is that first,
bite,
the first crack.
The crunch.
You don't bite all the way through the grape. You get the squirt. It's like that gum they used to sell that you bite into it and it squirts, and that's what the joy of eating the grape is, because you bite into it and you get the squirt. And so when you got the squirt, it landed not on your shirt, but it landed on the chair.
Still, close your mouth when you chew.
Okay.
I think we've solved the case.
I thought Matt was doing that.
It's all those Encyclopedia Brown books I used to read as a child.
But how dare they? How dare they blame us for being messy?
Yeah, that was not what they say, kosher.
I mean, come on. This message from Robert, who is watching on YouTube, says, I feel like Wheeler would be a booger smasher.
Absolutely.
What is a booger masher? Is a booger masher, is it somebody who rolls it?
I don't know.
Is that what that is?
I don't know.
Listen to them.
Thanks for your thoughts, though, Robert.
Us being messy? He leaves all of his crap on the common table.
He has mouse in his car.
I clean up after myself well.
The guy with mice in his car and trash is blaming us for being messy.
Did the dishes at home last night, as a matter of fact.
It's John Hancock in for Amy Mark's Scores. I'm Chris Ranji. Bob Thiemann is the author of 12 Rings.
Cool book.
It is a book about the Cardinals and their 12 championships.
12, you say?
Yeah, Ron Jacober, part of this book as well.
Nice.
Ron Jacober, longtime KMOXer. Bob's next in studio on 104.1 FM KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.
Yep, Cardinals, they've won a lot over the course of their, history. Lots of world championships, and the second most, in fact. Only the Yankees have more. And to discuss the new book called 12 Rings, the stories of the St. Louis Cardinals World Championships, Bob Thiemann is in studio with us. Bob, got a copy of the book right here. The thing is awesome. There's a lot in here.
Well, we hope so, yes.
Yeah, there is. It's, got 240 or so pages worth of stories from the World Championship. So when you got that many, it's pretty easy to write. It's not easy to write a book, but you have a lot of material to work with.
And indeed, the Reedy Press in 2011, actually late 2010, came to a friend of mine, of sports writers, Jim Rogalski, says, can you write a book on the Cardinal 10 World Championships? He said, well, and have it out by Christmas time. He said, well, no, I'm going to need a co-author. So I got dragged into project. And I've done several books with Reedy since then. But it came out in the spring of 2011. And by the fall, it was outdated because the Cardinals won.
They won their 11th World Series. And yet your book is entitled 12 Rings. What's the give?
Well, Jim Rogalski and I really first got together through our mutual interest in expertise in the 1880s St. Louis Brown stockings, or Browns.
Yeah.
They were in the American Association at the time. They did move into the National League in 1892, but they won 4 pennants in the American Association in the 80s. And every year they played the National League pennant winner in an early form of the World Series. Now, in 1885... they played the Chicago White Stockings, now known as the Cubs. Mm-hmm. And the season ended, the series ended early and in a dispute. Well, the next year, both teams repeated as National League and American Association champs. So they arranged another series, and this time it was going to be for blood. I mean, it was very competitive. They set up a best of 7 series. the first time that had ever been done.
Wow.
And they said that the winning team gets all the gate receipts. Wow. The losers get nothing. Winner take all series.
Okay.
So it was very, very highly competitive, and a lot of side bets among the players too. So the Cardinals, it was three games in Chicago. The Cardinals lost two out of the three. The Browns, I'm sorry. And they came to St. Louis, and St. Louis won three in a row to take the series. The last game, they won it on a 10th inning wild pitch. So,
wow.
And sending off one of the first of the many great championship celebrations here in St. Louis.
That's an incredible story, and that is the first world championship for the St. Louis, for the franchise that began as the Perfectos and ended up as the Cardinals.
Right. It was, yeah, Perfectos in between, but.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it was also the beginning of the Cardinal Cubs rivalry.
Yeah. That's now you've got great stories, great details. You've got a lot of the stats from each of the successive World Series team. I want to ask you, in your opinion, which of those Cardinal rosters of the World Series winners was the best?
I'd have to say 1942.
Yep.
Okay. They won 106 games, although they only won the pennant by 2 games. He had to come from over 10 games behind to catch the Dodgers. That's still the team record for wins. And then they beat the Yankees in the World Series, and that was unbelievable
right.
at the time. The Yankees had been in the World Series the last seven times, and had lost a total of only 4 games in winning those 7 championships. So
that's it's really incredible the amount of good teams, spectacular teams the Cardinals have had. One of their best ever didn't even win a World Series in 2004. We were just talking about that.
Yes.
That was a great, great team.
It was.
So it's interesting that sometimes you have a team that may not be the best, but they end up winning the World Series anyway. And the Cardinals, it's happened to them before.
Well, it has. Although when it was just the 2 pennant winners, the 2 first place teams in the American National League, it was hard to get a team that was not good to win the World
right.
Series. But now with the expanded playoffs, it's happened to the Cardinals 06 and 2011, where they were not the best team in the league.
So the 2016, that's the first World Series that the Cardinals
yes.
won, had a left-hander on it by the name of Bill Sherdell, who I contend should be in the Cardinals Hall of Fame.
Well, our locals chapter of the Society for American Baseball Research has formally nominated him. Actually.
Oh, good.
So, so we're behind that.
Is he still the winningest left-hander in Cardinal history?
I believe he is.
Yeah.
And he's the game one starter in 1926 and again in 28. So he was the ace of the staff, although they did have Grover Alexander there for a
little bailed him out.
Yeah.
You know, my first real memories of baseball, like the sorts of memories where I felt like I understood the game would have been 1985. That was the first. So they didn't win in 85. They didn't win in 87. Right. But I remember them going. I was alive for 1982, and I have a vague memory of it. I knew something was going on. I remember Celebrate Good Times being the song that was playing all over the place. Like I remember that. But historically, in terms of the rest of the world championships, What was that team like compared to the others?
The 82 team?
Yeah.
They were, they rejuvenated St. Louis after a decade of not really contending.
Rough. The 70s were rough.
And Whitey Ball was, was the thing. Everybody in St. Louis embraced that. Everybody else, was tearing their hair out because of all the stolen bases going on. But that team was last in the majors in home runs,
mm-hmm.
and they beat the Milwaukee Brewers in the World Series, who were first in the majors in home runs. So just goes, that's the old Cardinal adage of pitching and defense and speed that'll win your games, whereas you don't need the power. And St. Louis embraced it big time. So.
That spongy turf didn't hurt a bit either.
No.
I'm fascinated by, because I think this was one of our better teams, the 67 Cardinals. You had Cepeda, who was the MVP, Gibson in his prime. That was a really good ball club.
It was, and not expected to win the pennant preseason at all, but everything turned out right. Pitching, they had got big contributions from guy named Dick Hughes,
yeah,
and Nelson Briles that yeah. weren't expected at all. They had a youngster named Steve Carlton who was just starting his Hall of Fame career. So suddenly they had all this pitching, and they had a lot of still the same speed and defense with Curt Flood and Lou Brock and the like.
Yeah, Javier could scoot a little bit too.
He could,
and,
definitely.
That was a good team. Tim McCarver finished second in the MVP race that year.
He did. Cepeda was a unanimous choice. But McCarver also, he had like 470 in two different World Series, including that one. So
was 64 the year the Phillies collapsed?
64 was the year. That was of all the unexpected titles, that was probably the most unexpected because Cardinals never were in first place until the last week of the season. They won by one game over two different teams, including the Phillies, and had a nice eight-game winning streak in there to get them to first place. So when they won that National League pennant, then beating the Yankees didn't seem that hard. So.
Bob Thiemann is the author of 12 Rings. It's an updated version of 10 Rings, the previous book that he had to update because of the other championships. When you were writing this, was there, and going back to when you first started the project years ago, was there anything about any of these championship teams that you thought was surprising or something you think people should know about one of those teams that maybe we didn't really know or understand at the time?
Well, the 1944 when the Cardinals beat the Browns and the only pennant the Browns ever won.
Streetcar series.
In the World Series, the Cardinals made only one error and the Browns made 10. So, you know, the Cardinals were so seen as a powerhouse, but it was actually their fielding that was the difference in their superiority. So.
It still went seven games.
Six games.
Actually. Okay, sorry.
The Browns, struck out 10 times every game in the last three games.
Wow. So.
Bob Thiemann is with us, the author of 12 Rings. Where can people find the book if they want to pick it up?
Oh, anywhere books are sold. It's from Reedy Press, the local publisher. That they get them distributed to all the local bookstores. And actually, then you could also go on Amazon and wherever.
Also, Ron Jacober, part of this book, too.
Yes,
Ron here, KMOX for a long time.
He added some. He didn't write any of the chapters, but he's added some insights and. He and I have cooperated on a couple other books, too, for Reedy. So.
Well, Bob, this is really a cool book.
Yeah,
and
very cool.
Glad to have the updated version of it. 12 Rings, Stories of the St. Louis Cardinals World Championships. We thank you for coming in and talking about the book with us today.
Well, thank you
so much.
Thank you for having me, too. I would like to make one quick plug.
Sure.
Saturday at Forest Park, we're going to have an 1875 rules baseball game.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
We've had another, the
just
organizer has been here on KMOX as well. So 1 o'clock for game time and come on out free. If you can, maybe have to walk a little from the parking lot.
That'll be fun.
But it should be fun.
Thanks, Bob, for coming in.
Well, thank you.
That is Bob Thiemann. The book is called 12 Rings, Stories of the St. Louis Cardinals World Championships. It's John Hancock and Chris Ranji. The Gas House Gang is coming up at 12, but we'll start with the press conference from City SC, who let go of their head coach, Olaf Melberg, a couple of days ago. So the press conference at 12 will bring that to you. It's all coming up on 104.1 FM, KMOX. How much of what's in this book, John, 12 Rings, the championships of the Cardinals?
Yeah.
Of the St. Louis franchise. Yeah. How much of this did you already know?
Quite a bit. I mean, I've studied, a lot of Cardinal history, and I love baseball trivia. Although I got the number of games wrong on the 44 series, that's upsetting to me. I've always thought it went seven games. But
well, how'd you screw that up?
I don't know. I just had it in my head. It went seven games. Somebody must have told me that in error once.
So it's somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I clearly didn't read it. But yeah, no, and there's great stories in here and great teams, those 40s teams. Because of the war, baseball was kind of funky in those war years.
Yeah.
And so much, I mean, you think about the players, Ted Williams gone, so many of the most talented players in the league gone during that time, same usual. So, yeah.
That's the wildest part of that, thinking about – how basically against their will, you know, not all of them. I'm sure some of them wanted to go and fight.
Yeah.
But you're in the middle of playing this sport, which you could never envision that happening now. Like, I know the whole Pat Tillman thing where he went.
He volunteered.
He volunteered. Right. Right. But normally that wouldn't happen because it is too lucrative to play a professional sport now, if it's Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA. That wouldn't happen, right? But to think about that then, where, you know, for some of these guys, there's like a 3 or 4 or 5 year gap,
mm-hmm.
where they had a career, they're gone for 3-4 years, then they come back and they're playing.
Some of them were gone in World War II and Korea.
Yeah.
And you know the story of Mo Berg?
Off the top of my head, no.
He was the backup catcher on the Yankees. He backed up Yogi Berra. Barely played. Came out years later, he was a CIA operative.
Oh.
Isn't that something?
Did not know about that.
Yeah, that's a great story. They may have made a movie about it. I'm not sure. But if they haven't, they should. But I know there's been books written about it.
That is super fascinating.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah. Just and you know, it's difficult to try and think of that now, just because it would never happen now.
Right.
Right, because the sports are so different than they used to be. I mean, the guys who were playing in the 40s, you know, used to have other jobs sometimes.
Well, and the ball players lived in our neighborhoods. As recently as the 1970s, like the neighborhood I live in, John Denny, the Cardinal pitcher, lived there. And it's a nice neighborhood, but it's, I mean, no ball player, you know, their houses would be in much better places today than my neighborhood. But it wasn't that long ago where they, you know, ball players were your neighbors.
Well, now that's not. Now they're in gated communities,
right?
Because they can't have weirdos like you showing up.
Exactly.
Knocking on the door.
Isn't that
like, hey, you want to talk baseball?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, they can't have that.
Can't have it. Can't have it.
Although in St. Louis, I don't think they get bothered very often. I don't think people, Cardinals players, don't really get bothered. I maybe there are markets where it's worse. I can't imagine this is one of them, where people are probably friendly to you and they will come up to you, but they're not going to hound you all the time.
Yeah. Although when I was 10, Ronj, we were out at the Jacks Are Better. Remember those?
The what?
The Jacks Are Better restaurants. You could put your peanut shells on the floor there. Mm-hmm. And my brother's band, Sweet Leaf, was performing. And they had a pong game that you could play. You know, the little thing goes back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're sitting there eating dinner, and I look over at the next table, and it's Reggie Smith.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Cardinals right fielder at the time. And so I said to my mom and dad, I said, that's Reggie Smith. And my dad said, no, that's not Reggie Smith. The Cardinals are playing tonight. And I said, Dad, he got injured in the third inning. And so my mom goes over, and she says, My little boy thinks you look like Reggie Smith. And he said, I am Reggie Smith. And he signed a napkin for me.
Oh, that was nice.
And big looping G's, I remember, on his signature. And years later, you know, he got into the batting glove business after he retired. And it was a pretty big deal. He's in his 80s now, I think. But when Michael and I first started here, Peggy Cohill was our producer. And I got Reggie Smith on and interviewed him about his batting glove business. Really good guy. Nice guy.
Did we talk about this, or was it with Amy? Ken Harrelson, you've heard of Hawk Harrelson, the announcer.
Yeah.
He takes credit for inventing the idea of batting gloves.
He
was using a golf
club. Yeah, right.
And then that was, at the time, just using it on the bottom hand.
Right.
Right, just like you would with the golf club.
Right.
Which is interesting. He says he's the first one to do it.
That would have been, in the 60s?
No, I think it was in the... Yeah, maybe it was. Maybe it was the 70s. 60s, 70s.
It would have been
there.
The 70s, because I had a batting glove in Little League.
I had him in the 80s,
yeah,
obviously.
I had him in the 70s.
And we would still... If you had one batting glove
That's
on the bottom
I
had, it was a huge... It was
yeah.
a big deal.
Oh, you're
deal.
So cool.
If you had two...
Oh, buddy.
You were rich.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was crazy how that used to work out. But here's what's funny about running into athletes.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, unless there was a Cardinals autograph signing at like a car dealership or something. Like, I remember going to see Tito Landrum at a mini mall in Granite City. We went to a Mike LaValliere signing somewhere, Jack Clark signing.
Yeah.
But and they were always like an autograph signing specific thing where you go and get in line. I don't ever recall randomly running into a Cardinal until I became an adult and went to the bars. Yeah. And then when I started going to bars, I'm like, oh, that's a Cardinal right there. I remember this. This is when growing up started for me. I was at J Bucks. Remember the restaurant?
Oh, sure,
J Bucks?
Yeah. The one in Clayton.
Yep. That was the one in Clayton. It's I was just out of college.
What's it? The Capitol Grill now, I think.
I think it is in that space, yep. Yes. So I remember being there, and Brendan Shanahan was in there.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God, Brendan Shanahan's. I was 21 mm-hmm. at the time, maybe 22. And he's there. And they've got a game the next day.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, my God, what are these guys doing? What are they doing? They got a game. You're supposed to be at home in bed right now. You're supposed to be asleep. And then I realized, the older I got, that professional athletes, the day before games, depending on the sport, they're not too worried about it.
Yeah.
Some guys don't go out. Some guys don't do that stuff. But there are a lot of them who will.
And do.
They'll stay out till 2 or 3.
Oh, yeah.
Have a day game the next day. They'll wake right up and go play and go 4 for 5.
That's not unique to the modern era. We were talking about Grover Cleveland Alexander earlier. You know, save the Cardinals in the 26th series. They brought him out of the bullpen with a hangover. And he managed to get him out. But, yeah.
When I was working with the Sox, there were two guys, one pitcher and one hitter. I'm not going to name them. But this was right around the time Charlie Sheen had, they were playing in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And Charlie had done the whole winning thing. You know, remember that? Uh-huh. And he was like, everybody was talking about Charlie Sheen for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during that. And they got invited to a party at his house. So they went.
Wow.
And they had a day game the next day.
Yeah.
Well, the pitcher had already started. So he wasn't pitching the next day. The hitter was not supposed to be in the lineup.
Uh-oh.
They were out all night.
All night.
All night at Charlie Sheen's house. They get up the next day, go to the ballpark. Dude's in the lineup. And he's like, oh, God. Oh, no. And his first at bat, he gets a hit. And the way they tell the story, it was like we were terrified that we were going to be in trouble. But as long as I got a hit, then it would be like, okay, good. I did my part. I got a hit today. And he did. So they felt like they were off the hook.
Wow.
But these guys just don't. It's not all of them do it. And some of them really take their bodies seriously. So they don't partake in that stuff.
The whole nutrition thing is big now.
It's a much bigger deal, but guys for a long time, man. And this goes back decades and decades, not just recently.
Well, in the 50s and 60s, they were taking greenies to get up for the games.
Yeah.
Speed, basically. And so, yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, the steroid era, I understand the disdain for players using those performance enhancers. But, I think it was part of it was in the game. And
I've told you this before. I knew Moose Skowron real well.
Yeah.
And Mickey Mantle was his roommate on the roads when they were going road. And that guy was going out all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Coming in real late.
Oh, yeah.
5 for 5 the next day.
Mick, wow.
This guy was unbelievable.
What he would have been had he taken better care of himself is
already one of the best of all time.
Right. But he would have been in levels beyond, I think.
That's John Hancock. We'll do it again tomorrow. You've got Michael Kelly in the morning, too, with us.
I do.
Yeah. And then you and I will stick around for the rest of the show after that.
That's
anything you missed is on the Odyssey app. We have the press conference coming up here shortly. The City SC press conference and the Gas House Gang will start up after that on 104.1 FM KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.